Places that he don't wanna go. Looks for love and for hope.
Good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now, with host Ken Johnston. Stay tuned as Ken talks with authors, journalists, and others regarding topics important to us as Catholics in a world that's in desperate need of God's love.
Love that comforts from heaven above. And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your financial and prayerful support that's kept us here for over 40 years now, and like I say, allows me to be here each and every Wednesday to hopefully bring you great shows like today's. Just a quick word before we go to our guest. We're currently working on a trip to Ireland, a pilgrimage, if you will, next June. I think the dates are going to be Monday, June the 2nd to Monday, June the 9th. And the theme around this is going to be the centenary of Matt Talbot's death. Matt Talbot died on June the 7th, 1925, and June 7th of next year is a Saturday. And there's going to be a lot going on in Dublin, Ireland, around the life of Matt Talbot. And we thought that we would start in the west of Ireland and at Knock on Monday, June the 2nd, and make our way across Ireland, culminating in a weekend in Dublin to attend some of those celebrations. Myself, Father McKay, should be on hand. He's been invited to offer a healing service in Our Lady of Lourdes Church on Sean McDermott Street on that Friday night, June the 6th. The Archbishop of Dublin will offer Mass on Saturday the 7th for Matt Talbot, and various things going on around town that weekend. So if you're interested in joining us, reach out to me at ken@inhissign.com. ken@inhissign.com, or call Maureen here and she can put you in touch with me. We've just about finalized the details. I think we were just waiting on the final airfare so we could put a price tag on that pilgrimage. Without any further ado, it's my privilege to welcome back to the show Dr. Helen Hoffner. Helen has been with us in the past with some other books that she's written. If I'm not mistaken, you're still at Holy Family. Is that right, Helen?
Yes, I am.
And I've written a number of books around the Catholic faith. I think the last time we had you back, it was Catholicism Everywhere, which was just a wonderful book about, you know, everywhere we turn, not only in the Philadelphia area, but around the country, we can find something to do with our great faith of Catholicism. And now she's compiled a book. I just had it in front of me, entitled The Rosary Collector's Guide. It's published by Schiffer Publishing, and we were made aware of it by Sophia Institute, who gives us a lot of information on books that are coming out, and they're doing some of the promotion for that book. Normally, we recommend that you go to the publisher first in order to get this book, but in this case, Amazon and or Barnes & Noble might be your best bet. The St. Jude shop out in Havertown may have copies. I would give them a call first and make sure before you go. They can probably order it and get it in if they don't already have it, but this is one that you may have to use some of the big box stores in order to pick up. And Dr. Helen, I was only able to get an e-version of the book, and I'm planning on getting the hardback now that I've had a couple of days to go through it and see what's all here, because this is really a different perspective. You know, normally when we talk to authors about the rosary, it has something to do with the devotions or the prayers and what have you. And this was really enlightening as to all the different forms that the rosary has been made in, the different materials, the some of the more famous ones that have been out there. So this must have been quite an effort to put this book together.
It was an effort, but it was enjoyable. My mother collected rosaries all her life. She's from the Philadelphia area, grew up in St. Barnabas Parish. And she used to collect rosaries just like a child would, just some that were pretty. And when she became an adult, she found one that had seven decades. And she wondered what that was all about, since most of us are used to seeing five-decade rosaries. And she started investigating that. And then when I became an adult, kind of did the research with her. And every time Christmas, birthday, Mother's Day rolled around, I always wanted to buy her a book to help with her research. And like you said, there's many books out there with beautiful rosary prayers and reflections as we're saying the rosary. But I couldn't find a book that would help her understand why one has seven decades while most have five, or what different crosses mean. So the book really came from what my mother and I needed in our research.
Very good. Just a quick shout out here for my engineer. As soon as you mentioned St. Barney's, the fist went up. And we got a proud St. Barney's alum here in the studio with us. So I want to make sure we recognize him along with your mom. I was just curious. How many rosaries do you think were in your mother's collection? Obviously, not all the pictures in the book are of your own collection. But as I was going through it, there must be quite a few. Any idea how many rosaries you have?
My mother is now 96 years old and owns over 1,000.
Wow.
In the book, the only one in the book that we do not own, is there's a picture in the book of a rosary that belonged to Henry VIII when he was a teenager, back before his famous split with the church. So that one, we purchased a photograph from a museum in England.
Wow. So all those are in your possession. And for those that are listening, if you pick up this book, it's probably not a coffee table book, right? It's more of a hardbound book. And if you have rosaries, older rosaries, if you are interested in collecting rosaries, you know, there's always scams out there that are being run, and people advertise a rosary that, you know, say it's 100 years old and it's, you know, was just made last week. That I think this is the book for you. And when I started to look at it, you know, I've got a number of rosaries myself. I'm far from being a collector. They just kind of accumulate. You know, very different people have given me rosaries when they've been on pilgrimages or trips, and they come back. But one of the first ones that really caught my eye, and it was more that it was Henry VIII than it was that it was the actual rosary. The rosary itself is absolutely beautiful, but I immediately went to, you know, how's a young man, a teenager, that's been given this wonderful gift and hopefully he prayed a few rosaries with it, goes from, you know, that mindset to where he ended up in the end. And if I'm not mistaken, in the book it says that he was given that rosary by Cardinal Wolsey.
Yes, people say perhaps he should have used it more and we wouldn't be in the state we are today. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the book is broken down into a number of sections. I think seven to be exact. And then even within those seven major areas, there's all types of subchapters, if you will. And it starts out with the development of the rosary. And so, like we said, there's been a number of books written about, you know, how the rosary first got started, you know, the monks praying the Psalter, and rather than praying 150 Psalms, would pray 150 Ave Marias, and what have you. But the actual making of the beads themselves is where this book really comes into play. And so maybe just a word on the development of the actual rosary, Dr. Helen.
Well, a lot of people kind of attribute it to St. Dominic. But even among the Dominican orders, they say St. Dominic encouraged the rosary, but didn't necessarily be the one to start it. It was there before his time. You were mentioning a trip coming up to Ireland. And we like in the book highlighting some Irish rosaries. There was a Mitchell Rosary Factory in Dublin, Ireland. And started around the 1800s and was going strong to about the 1960s. And in Dublin, they would even take cow horn and boil it down and make little beads from it. And it gave people an income in Ireland. And women could either work in the factories, or if they were busy with children, they could take beads at home and string them. So some of the horn rosaries from the Mitchell Factory of Ireland were the most historic ones. And then you had people like Creed in the 1940s in the United States thought that people had kind of plastic rosaries and ones that weren't that fancy. He found the customers wanted more elegant ones. So Creed even teamed with Swarovski crystals and made crystal rosaries, some that are extremely expensive, like the Swarovski crystal ones, but then he had also some more economical ones. And then one of the largest rosary makers now is Girelli. They opened about 1987, and Girelli has the distinction of being the supplier to the Vatican. If Pope Francis is making a trip like he did in 2015 to visit with President Obama, when the Pope presents a rosary to a head of state, it's a Girelli rosary. And just like in England, they have suppliers to the royal family, Girelli supplier to the Vatican. So I think it's interesting to see the kind of rosaries that are being made today.
And, of course, all the, there's various kinds of rosaries. You mentioned that, the traditional five-decade rosary. There's the seven-decade rosary, which my wife had given me one probably about 15 years ago after going to see Immaculée and learning about the Seven Sorrows rosary. But the one I found fascinating, and I recently had somebody that's been making a number of them for me locally to raise money for this film that we're making. And it's the one-decade rosary. But when I look in your book, there's not one-decade rosaries. They called them tenors. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they call Henry VIII a tenor because it was just a decade. And there was even some that they called in Ireland the penal rosary. Back when Catholicism was outlawed and you were afraid to be seen carrying Catholic religious articles, they would slip a little one-decade tenor down their sleeve so they could sort of hide it. So we can call it a tenor, we can call it a decade, there's many different names for it.
And usually the rosaries will have a number of things that are pretty standard, and of course they begin with the cross and a crucifix. And you actually broke it into two separate sections, one for crosses and one for crucifixes. Why the difference?
Well, there's even some research about in Catholicism we believe in having a crucifix. There's a crucifix at every mass. And Fulton Sheen made a statement about that there should be a crucifix, that a cross without Christ on it, you don't have the Savior. We broke it down because there's different perspectives on it. Catholics firmly believe in having the crucifix there. There are some Protestant faiths that say Jesus rose from the cross, don't put him back on there. So we wanted to show various kinds of crucifixes, like the log crucifix that Pope John Paul II would carry, San Damiano crucifix that's associated with Franciscans and has images on it. We wanted to separate those kind of crucifixes from just the simple crosses.
One of the ones I found interesting was the skull and crossbones crucifix. It may seem kind of creepy to some people. Is that come about for a particular reason?
And, people do say it seems kind of creepy, and actually what they'd like us to do is have a different thought instead of kind of being fearful of it. It's not a Halloween image. It's thinking about this life is not all that we have, that we have a life in heaven, and thinking about the next life, preparing for the next life, hopefully in a joyous way. And as you said, most of us, the skull is kind of scary, but we're trying to look upon the next life as something joyful.
Amen. One of the things, and I've come across this more recently, I've got, I think, at least two rosaries now that would contain either relic crucifixes or relic centerpieces. And it seems to be, I don't know if it's still as popular as it used to be, but popular to put different relics in these pieces.
Yeah, some rosaries come with the relic there, maybe cloth that's touched to a saint, that type of thing, a second or third class relic. Sometimes if you get one from Lourdes, where the water is such an important part of the shrine there at Lourdes, So we even have a little vial of water from Lourdes. Sometimes you get some with water from a place like that where the water was important, Lourdes, or you might have sand from the Holy Land. So sometimes, as you said, sometimes they come with something special inside them, or other times there's a locket and people maybe just add what's special to them.
I'm just scanning through the book, and some of these are just absolutely beautiful. One of the things that, after the cross and the crucifix, a lot of times, we're looking at these center medals, and they'll be based on perhaps the specific type of rosary. You list about the Marian shrines, whether it's Częstochowa, Fatima, Guadalupe, Knock, Lourdes, Medjugorje. I think a lot of our friends here in the Philadelphia area, because of our Miraculous Medal Shrine, we'll see it with Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal. Were the center medals, were they always part of the rosary, or is that the later development?
That was a later development. The very early ones don't have a center medal. Sometimes they're just sort of tied together at the middle. And as you're looking at a rosary, center medal is sometimes the easiest way to figure out the age of the rosary. Sometimes you can look at it by if it's a pope, it's especially easy. There was a time when religious article makers were only allowed to make something with the pope's image while that pope was serving. But after the pope passed away, you wouldn't make any more medals with, say, Pope Pius X or some previous pope. So when I find old rosaries, you can look at the image of the pope and know it was made during the years that pope was serving in the Vatican. That was a rule for a long time.
Interesting.
St. John Paul II being so popular, there are still images being made with him now. But before his time, it was a rule that you didn't make the pope's image after they passed away. And when you were saying the Miraculous Medal, that's the one that fools a lot of people. So St. Catherine Laboure had the image of the Virgin Mary. Mary appeared to Catherine Laboure in 1830. And the Miraculous Medal came from that appearance of Mary to St. Catherine Laboure. Well, every Miraculous Medal is always stamped 1830. Even if I owned a factory and made Miraculous Medals today, we would put 1830 on it. A lot of times people will find a rosary that looks kind of old and dingy, and they'll think, my rosary is so old, it was made in 1830. So people might think it's a rosary from 1830, but probably not. And they say that of the original Miraculous Medals that were made in the 1800s, at one time, there was 2,000 rosaries made that year of 1830. And as far as anyone knows, there's only about 10 left in existence. One of them is at our Miraculous Medal Shrine in Philadelphia. So they have an original Miraculous Medal. Probably the ones that are on rosaries that all of us own are not the original medals.
Gotcha. So once we get past the cross and the medal, of course, they're various ways of putting these together. Up until recently, I think more recently, a lot of them are being made with string. But prior to that, it would be links and chains, and then you have you include extenders here. What are extenders?
Sometimes people actually add to their rosary. If you're going on a pilgrimage, like your group that's going to Knock, sometimes people will buy a medal while they're there because that visit is so important to them and attach it to their rosary. And at that point, we might call it a pilgrim rosary. If you're fortunate to visit Knock, and maybe in your lifetime you'll get to Fatima or Lourdes, or even just something that's special to you, if there's a saint that you have a particular devotion to, people will extend their rosaries by adding medals like that.
Very good. And then, of course, the next topic is the beads. And there's probably as many types of beads that have been used to make rosaries as there is material in the world. And going through this, the list that you're provided, I'm sure it covers most of them, but there's probably others that have been used because people could basically make it out of anything. Recently received a couple that were made with seashells. But anyway, the earliest rosaries, Were they normally just some sort of round bead, or were there other materials that were involved?
Well, before that, there are some ancient recordings where people took stones. They would just take a group of pebbles, put them in their pocket, and drop a pebble as they walked along the road. If you think about it, the rosary in some ways is a way of counting your prayers. So there were stories of people filling their pockets with stones and then saying a prayer as they dropped each stone out of their pocket as they walked down the road, or stories of people taking an earthenware bowl, filling it with stones, and taking a stone out with each prayer that they said. There were the stones. There was, like, the Mitchell factory in Dublin, taking horn and making it from. I think my favorite in terms of materials is Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, I'm sure as she got to be more famous, was given many beautiful rosaries in her lifetime. But the sisters of her order say that for Mother Teresa's personal rosary, she carried one made out of a seed known as Job's Tears. It's a really hard little seed that just in nature has a hole in it. And people in the areas where Mother Teresa ministered used to take these Job's Tears seeds and make necklaces and bracelets and all kinds of jewelry with it. Well, Mother Teresa had some of the Job's Tears made into a rosary. So there she was traveling the world in her personal rosary made out of seeds. It's a very hard seed. It's not going to crumble like some types of seeds would. You go from Mother Teresa having a rosary made out of seeds to rosaries that are actually been made where every bead is a diamond. There are diamond rosaries. There was Creed back in the early, like, 1900s, late 1800s, making rosaries out of Swarovski crystals. There are Murano glass rosaries. In Ireland, they'll sell rosaries made of Connemara marble. So as you said, there are rosaries made of just about any material you can think of.
One of the, towards the end of that section, there's a section on the metal beads, and it kind of drew my attention. The past few years, there's been Father Richard Heilman and others that have really emphasized the use of the rosary as a weapon, the silver bullet, like the miraculous metal, and talked about it. And so I'm 63, post World War II, but apparently there was a time when rosaries were distributed to our military when they were recruited, and like probably when they would be shipped overseas or what have you. And so I've gotten obviously they're not originals. They've started to make them again, these battle rosaries or World War I rosaries. Was that around the time that the metal beads first started to be used, or was it prior to that?
That was really around the first time. It was around World War I and World War II. And as you said, in those days, the rosaries were actually paid for out of government funds. Nowadays, we have more separation of church and state. But those were paid for military funds, given to chaplains to give to the soldiers. They've been called different names. They'll be called military rosaries. Some people call them a pull chain rosary because the little tiny metal beads look like the pull chain you might have on a lamp.
Yeah.
You kind of pull the lamp. Or people even call them plumber's rosary because it looks like the sink stopper from the 1940s.
Interesting. And then, of course, you know, these are all the materials. We've got the crosses, the centerpieces, the links, the beads. But they can be configured into all kinds of shapes and ways. And so in chapter 7 of the book, which is really the final chapter, I believe, you just talk about all the various forms of the rosaries. And is there a couple of them that really jump out at you that are so much different than what most people have come to know as a rosary?
Yes, in the Philadelphia area, we don't tend to see one that's either called a matrimony rosary or some people call it a lasso rosary. And that's a rosary that starts off like most rosaries. It'll have a cross or crucifix and then the pendant of the Our Father and the three Hail Mary beads. But then when you get to the center medal, it branches off to two complete five-decade rosaries. And the custom is that when you use this during a wedding, during the wedding mass, the priest would put one of those rosaries around the neck of the bride, one around the neck of the groom. Sometimes there's even a third rosary that would hang between the couple, and prayers are said. And the thought is that you're uniting the couple in the rosary. And then in weddings that use these, after the wedding ceremony in the church, when you're having the reception and you're cutting the cake and all the other wedding traditions, you take that wedding rosary, and most of them have a clasp like you would have on a necklace, so you can take them apart, and you would give one of the rosaries to the groom's family, one to the bride's family, to tell them to pray for the couple. And if it's one that has a third rosary attached, then the couple keeps that for themselves to pray the rosary. We don't see it much in the eastern part of the United States, but when I've gone out to San Antonio, it's very common there. And you can go to some of the open-air flea markets in San Antonio and meet the brides that are there picking out their rosaries. I've also been told it's very common in the Philippines, parts of Mexico. And you're starting to see it come in different catalogs for religious articles, coming back in tradition of, they'll either call it the matrimony rosary or the family rosary. Just a different tradition than we tend to see in Philadelphia.
Interesting. Our guest today is Dr. Helen Hoffner, and she's written a fabulous book on the Rosary Collector's Guide that'll help you if you come across rosaries, you're interested in collecting rosaries. I think it's not only the only book, so that would make it the definitive book on collecting rosaries, that you may want to go ahead and pick this up. It's published by Schiffer Publishing. And talking to Dr. Hoffner, we're kind of recommending that do something we don't ordinarily do here, and that's pick it up either from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And again, our friends locally here at the St. Jude Shop in Havertown, if you were to inquire, I'm sure that they can get a copy for you. It might take them a bit if they don't already have it in stock, but you can certainly inquire there as well. Doctor, we've just about reached the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a short break, and I think we still got a few more things we can cover when we come back. For our listeners, thank you for being here. And again, just going to be a short break, so don't go away. We're going to come back and talk some more about the rosary.
My name is Mario D'Adamo, and I have been a faithful listener to InnerSign Radio Ministry since 1990, and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said he would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, We can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. Again, all praise and thanksgiving for our listeners and all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. I'll put the phone number out there. If there's somebody, if you've got a specific question about a particular rosary you've come across, maybe you can you try giving us a call. The number is 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906. Again, our guest is Helen Hoffner. The book we're talking about is the collector, the Rosary Collector's Guide, and talks about all things rosary. And, you know, if you've been Catholic most of your life and had parents, grandparents, great-grandparents that were Catholic, and there's a lot of times these rosaries get passed down generation to generation. And it reminded me, Helen, back when my in-laws passed, and they, you know, just a crazy situation where they died within 5 days of each other. And we went out to Ohio, and all the family was there, kids, grandkids. And when we were going through their belongings, we found many, many, many rosaries, and so many that every kid and every grandkid, we're putting together different bags with things, and every bag had a rosary in it. Every bag had a couple of prayer cards in it that they had accumulated over the years. And you know, I was just thinking, I still see in my daughter's car that she drives around with the rosary that she got hanging around, you know, hanging around her rearview mirror, like so many other people do. So if you've gotten some of these hand-me-downs, these rosaries that may have come down over the generations, and you're not quite sure what it is, looks a little bit different, this book will probably have the answer to your questions as you try to determine, you know, where that rosary originally came from, and maybe what its purpose was, right?
Yeah, it really does help people with that type of thing. I mean, that's a wonderful gift that your in-laws left all the children to remember them with the rosary.
Yeah.
It's a tradition that people can have and think about their grandparents that way.
So the last, it's probably 100 pages or so, maybe a little bit less, goes through all the different types of rosaries. And it looks like in your mother's own collection, you know, even some of the ones that just honor particular saints, Padre Pio, St. Kateri Tekakwitha, St. Hubert, St. Anna de Beaupré, Mother Teresa, the Little Flower, and, of course, locally here, St. John Neumann.
Yeah, and it's fun, I'm thinking, when you were mentioning St. Hubert, so maybe some listeners are from St. Hubert's High School, and it's fun that on the St. Hubert's Rosary, there's a deer. And being a professor at Holy Family University, we get a lot of St. Hubert's graduates at the university. And St. Hubert's, all their sports teams are called the Bambies, the basketball team, and
yeah,
so forth.
Yeah.
And I'll always ask, and the girls will come to Holy Family wearing sweatshirts and say, once a Bambi, always a Bambi. And some of them know the story of St. Hubert and the deer, some don't. But I like to show them the rosary about how there's a legend of St. Hubert was living a life that wasn't the best. He got into a lot of trouble as a youth. I was out in the woods one day and saw a deer, and according to the story, the deer told St. Hubert that he should right his ways and get on the right path, and St. Hubert saved the life of the deer and lived a virtuous life. So I like to show the girls from St. Hubert the rosary with St. Hubert on one side and the deer on the reverse.
Very good. One of the things I didn't expect to see, and towards the end of the book here, is rosary counters. Now, in this day and age, I actually use a string of 50 beads to say a set of prayers on a regular basis, and the total number of the prayers is 500, so I use an app on my phone to keep track of each set of 50. But I didn't realize that there are actually rosary counters out there. There's some people that will get frustrated if they get interrupted in the middle of praying a rosary. Maybe they think they have 20 minutes or a half hour to spend with their rosary, and they get interrupted. And there's actually a way out there, or ways out there, I should say, for people to keep track of where they left off, huh?
There really are. Kind of like the old supermarket counters you carry along to add up your bill in the supermarket. Some of the rosary counters are battery-operated. Some of them are just a counter, like a netting counter. With all the gadgets out there related to the rosary, even one year, Hershey Company, right in our area, Hershey had a box, it was about maybe 8.5 by 11, and it said the sweetest rosary, and it was Hershey Kisses. So you had this box with the Hershey Kisses set inside, set like a rosary. So everyone has a new idea of how to present the rosary.
Good thing I haven't found them. I could get in trouble with Hershey Kiss rosaries. And plowing down 59 or 63 of them, you know, whatever the total number would be in the box on a daily basis. But, you know, it's interesting. You got to come up with a gimmick, right? If you're in sales, come up with a gimmick in order to sell something. You know, why not Hershey Kisses? The other one, and this, you know, sometimes I think Catholics may find it offensive and maybe even say something to somebody that might be wearing a rosary as jewelry. But you have a small section here called the rosary as jewelry. And so there's rosaries that were actually designed to be worn or as jewelry?
Yeah, they were. And as you said, it can be offensive. And we probably all have seen singers and videos that were using the rosary in a very offensive way. So I did some research to see what did the United States Conference of Bishops say about this. And actually, if you look at the websites for the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops and some other websites from the Vatican and so forth, the statement is that it's not necessarily bad to wear the rosary around your neck as a necklace. It's all about the intent. There may be people in jobs who, if they put a rosary in their pocket, it's going to fall out and get lost. And they presented the image of someone working in a field. It would not be disrespectful for someone working in a field to put the rosary around their neck because it would fall out of their pocket and get lost. If you're wearing it around your neck with sincere intentions, you're putting it there for the safety, you're putting it there so you can pray it during the day, that would actually be encouraged. There's nothing wrong with doing that. So some people just take an ordinary rosary that way. Some have a rosary that has a clasp like a necklace that you would open and close like a necklace to put it on. And then there are many rosary bracelets. Some are just one decade. Some are coiled around so you have all five decades of the rosary. But what has come from leaders of the Catholic Church, the Catholic Conference of Bishops in the United States, and Vatican websites would say, as long as your intention is sincere, there's nothing wrong with wearing the rosary to keep it safe that way.
Very good. That's good to hear because the friend of our ministries down in South Philadelphia, I mentioned we're raising money for a movie we're making on the life of Matt Talbot, and she made quite a few rosaries for us. Most of them are single decade or tenors, but either with a stretch band or a lobster claw. So you can wear them as a bracelet, and they're really, really well done and beautiful. But I suspected that was pretty much what it is, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to clarify. I've actually got a friend on the line, Helen, that usually calls in the 4 o'clock hour, but I think he may have a question about rosaries. Bob, is that you?
Yes, it is, Ken.
And you got a question about the rosary for Dr. Hoffner?
Well, what I wanted to say was that, you know, we have a man in the group at Grace Ferry, Calix Group, who makes the rosaries, and he makes them out of paracord. And he made one for me that's red, and it's so strong, and, you know, it's manly. It's a manly rosary, you know. I love it. It's my favorite rosary. I have spares in the car in case I forget. But like I told you before, there's Eucharistic adoration chapels down here. and they all have the rosary in it in case you forget, you know. A Lady of the Angels in Cape May Courthouse, when you come in the church, there's a wall with rosaries on it, and it says, please take one. They make them, and they, you know, they're, like, I've used them myself because they have the rosary before Mass. I forgot my rosary. Just pick it up right there. But I love my rosary that the man made in Grays Ferry. You can see him. He's making them sometimes during the Calyx meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Their paracord is just so strong. I've forgotten it in my pocket. It goes to the washing machine. A washing machine has, you know, doesn't bother it at all. You know, it runs through the dryer.
Right.
I love my. I want him one day. I want him to make me legacy rosaries for my family. I want him to make different colors for my son and my two daughters. You know, and he has a plastic crucifix. All I want to do is replace it with a wooden crucifix. But I love the rosary that he made me.
Yeah.
And like I say, you know, the prayer is the prayer. It's always the same. But this rosary, it's just manly. It makes me want to say the rosary. You know what I mean?
Amen. Nah, I appreciate it, Bob. And, you know, our good friend Harry, that and when his wife was alive, Helen, they were just great people. And we'd have our Calyx meetings, and they, the two of them would be sitting there tying the string rosaries. And then Harry also does them with paracord, which is a little bit thicker, a little bit stronger. And I've seen more of them. There's a rosary maker, and I think they're really focused on, you know, men who are really trying to use this rosary as a weapon, that more recently being made out of paracord and those types of materials.
Like I say, it will last forever, it seems.
Yep.
So I wanted him, like I say, to make legacy rosaries for my family.
Yeah.
Different colors for each one.
Yep.
And like I say, it's you know, we talk about sacramentals in the Catholic Church. This rosary makes me want to say the rosary. You know
there
what
you
I
go.
Mean?
Yep. Very good. Well, I'm still in touch with Harry on a regular basis, so keep in touch, and we'll see what we can do.
All right. Very good.
All right. Thanks for the call.
And, you know, there's been a lot of emphasis, as you said, on real men pray the rosary and making rosaries that would make a man want to just grab it and pray it. And as you're talking about people making the rosary, there was a group at St. Bartholomew's School, which the school closed many years ago. But a friend of mine actually had a rosary-making club where the children would make rosaries during their lunchtime recess. And the crossing guard would give out pieces of cord. There's a wonderful group called Our Lady's Rosary Makers that sell the cord. And I know when I've done a project, for $10 you can get enough cord to make 400 rosaries.
Yep.
And they have a slogan of make one, pray one, give one away. It's great to teach people to make the knot of cord rosaries and distribute them, as you were saying.
Yeah, there's a bunch of us that hang out in South Philly now. I think a whole lot of people are walking around with Harry and Cindy's rosaries, and they're just great. And like you said earlier, that, you know, a couple that I have, I've turned around and added Saints medals to them that I wanted to include. This woman, Phyllis, that's been making a bunch of rosaries for us now, is making them with these beautiful green beads with a Matt Talbot medal and a Celtic cross, so a real Irish theme. So they are out there. And like you say, they're not real expensive to make if you're sitting there watching TV or, you know, not doing much of anything. You can sit there and really make these beautiful rosaries to give to friends, family, strangers, whoever.
It's a nice craft for children to learn also.
Right. And I've actually in the past bought some supplies from Our Lady's Rosary Makers as well. That was making them with some brown string and olive wood that I was able to get at the time. And like I said, I would be sitting there, you know, having a conversation with my wife or watching a movie or something. And once you get to know how to do it, you can almost do it without looking. And it was I haven't done it. It's probably 10 years ago when I was doing that. But when you would give those rosaries to folks, how much they would appreciate them. You know, not that they're, you know, worth a whole lot of money or any great design, but the simple fact that people were, you know that you took the time to put it together and give it to them.
And if anyone ever makes a mistake making a rosary, there's a great story, Lucia, one of the children from Fatima. So Lucia was the only one of the three children to live to adulthood. And when Lucia was getting older, they wanted to make a statue to put at the shrine of Fatima. And the sculptor actually came to the convent where Lucia was so she could direct him and say, no, I didn't see her hair. No, the veil should be that way. And the sculptor wrote a book talking about this experience. And he said that as he was working on the statue, Lucia would be in the room giving him advice. And while she sat there, she was making a rosary. And the rosary that Lucia made, they wound up putting on the statue at Fatima. So the rosary that anyone goes to Fatima and sees that original statue, the rosary is one that Lucia made. And the sculptor said one of the decades has 11 beads. And she got so busy talking to him, she miscounted. Yeah. So I like that. That if we make a mistake, well, Lucia did too, and that was okay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if you're a rosary maker and every once in a while slip an 11th bead in there and see how long it takes the person that you give it to catch on. But it's funny. Well, yeah, all these interesting stories, family stories, and what have you that go along with these great sacramentals that we have. I've got a few minutes left. Is there anything, Dr. Hoffner, that we've not covered yet that you wanted to get to?
Well, I think, it is really a coffee table book. We're saying it's informational, but it's also rather large. It's bigger than a typical book with a lot of color photographs, so it might be considered a coffee table book also. One unusual rosary that people might wonder what they have in their collection, there's one called the Can't Tangle that is all one continuous cord where the crucifix, it's almost like a big necklace all put together. That rosary was actually patented by a priest who got frustrated with his rosary always getting tangled in his pocket. He called it the Can't Tangle, and he spelled it with a K-A-N-T hyphen and tangle. Nowadays, the oblates are selling one that they call Mary's Circle. So listeners today might have seen the Mary's Circle from the oblates. That really came from this patented Can't Tangle rosary from about maybe 1940s. So I love all those different variations.
Very good. I've got another caller on the line, and I want to get him in because we're short on time here. Hello, Mario. Mario, are you there, pal?
Maybe 1940s.
Mario.
Hey, Ken, how are you doing?
All right, brother, how are you?
Good, good. A couple comments and then a question. First off, I forgot your author's name, but I know she teaches, does she currently teach the Holy Family?
Yes. Yeah, it's Dr. Helen Hoffner, for those that may have tuned in late.
Okay, well, tell her congratulations. I saw in the inquiry today the Holy Family, very, very solvent. The most solvent, financially solvent, is the local university, small universities. So congratulations on that. That was my one comment. The other two are questions, I guess. Where can you purchase rosaries that when you purchase them, you know that you're not buying them from a company in China and you'd like it would go maybe to the Oblates or Franciscans, especially ones that don't tangle. My problem with rosaries, they're constantly tangling, and the metal ones, I have to get my little pliers out to untangle them. That's the one question. And then the second question I could hang up is, what Protestant denominations use the rosary, pray the rosary? Because I know Martin Luther used to pray the rosary before the Reformation, and I don't know if he still did after the Reformation, but I was wondering if Episcopalians, Methodists, Lutherans, et cetera, still pray the rosary.
Well, for your question about tangling, the oblates right now, if you purchase a rosary from the oblates, you know your money's going to a good place. And they have one called Mary's Circle that is a modern-day version of this Can't Tangle one. So I think in terms of tangling, it looks a little different. It's one big circle, but It's called Mary's Circle. It's made by the Oblates.
Tangling. The Oblates right now. If you purchase it from the Oblates.
Anglican groups that pray the rosary. I think Episcopalians is very kind of close to some of our traditions.
Yeah, I let him go. There was some background noise going on, and I'm sure Mario can still hear us. So, yeah, that I think that be a question comes up a lot of times about purchasing these and whether they they're cheap fakes or but they, like you said, probably the best bet is to buy directly from the orders that so that the funds would go to them, and can probably be relatively assured that they're being made appropriately, I guess. But I had the same thought, because I think one of the other rosaries that I saw listed was the Anglican rosary, which I don't know if that's specifically Episcopalian or came about after the what went down in England after Henry VIII.
Yeah, there are some groups that will use a rosary, because, you know, there are those who would say, like, well, it's almost idolatry to use a rosary. But many other Protestant groups will say, no, it's just an aid to prayer. It's not idolatry. It's just helping you with prayer. I liken a lot of it to, we have pictures of our family members in our house. That's not idolatry. That's just honoring someone.
That's right. And, as we were telling us, talking about the rosary and even other denominations that may use the rosary, I thought of two things. One was, I remember years ago, I met a Jewish woman who was Jewish, would go to synagogue, and yet she was praying the rosary. Somebody had given her a rosary, and she just loved that way of prayer. And then the other was a woman that's done a couple of paintings for us, consignments that we asked her to do. And before she became Catholic, was an evangelical Lutheran, I believe. And she was given a rosary. Somebody that was Catholic gave her a rosary, and she actually, because she thought of it as a form of idolatry, immediately threw it on the sidewalk and then crushed it with her heel. And she said that from that moment on, that the Blessed Mother was relentless, and it only took about 18 months, and she ended up coming into the Catholic faith. So try as they might, they may not want anything to do with the rosary, but even if it just touches them, apparently it can have a profound effect.
Yeah, it still works.
That's right. So our guest today is a repeat customer, Dr. Helen Hoffner. She's been here before with her book, Catholicism Everywhere, has written this great book published by Schiffer Publishing, entitled, The Rosary Collector's Guide. It is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. If you actually like to walk into a store and buy it, I recommend you go over to the St. Jude shop in Havertown. Call them first and make sure they have a copy. If they don't, they can probably get it in stock for you. I know you're busy with all you're doing at Holy Family University, so I really appreciate you taking the whole hour to be with us today, Helen. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always like to talk about rosaries.
Amen. One final question. Your mother's got 1,000 of these. Are they ever on display anywhere?
Sometimes we'll take them when we're asked to take them to shrines. We've done exhibits at the Padre Pio Center up in Bartow, Pennsylvania. We've taken them to Rosemont College, taken them to various parishes. Really, wherever colleges and shrines, we were doing a lot more of it before COVID, and then, of course, everything stopped during COVID, but we'll be getting on the road again.
Is there somewhere where somebody can look to find out, or is it you just wait for it to pop up in your church bulletin or something along those lines?
It pretty much pops up in church bulletins. I'm thinking various parishes we visited.
Okay.
You're giving me a good idea. We'll have to try and make a central place where people know what to look for.
Very good. Well, once again, thank you so much for being with us today. I certainly learned a lot in going through the book and definitely from the conversation today. So thanks for being with us. God bless you.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
You're welcome. So once again, another Wednesday with a couple of hours of radio time has come and just about gone. And I always love talking about the rosary. It had a huge impact on me back in 1993 on that first retreat that I made and started praying the rosary immediately after that retreat, after witnessing a couple hundred men praying that rosary together and realizing that it wasn't just something that my mother or grandmother would pray. It's been an interesting week since we were here last week. Of course, as things unfold here in the United States and around the world with the elections, just ask you to continue to pray for our president-elect, for all those that either got elected or reelected, that somehow or other that they managed to incorporate into their daily routine some way to discern what it is that God wants them to do with their vocations as politicians now. And the battle is far from over. You know, I've said it before and I have guests that have said it, that, you know, I don't know that there's any single or even group of politicians that can get us to where we need to be, that there's only one that's going to do that, and that's our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And we do that one person at a time through our own prayer life. We stay close to him. We ask him what it is that he would have us do, and then pray for the courage to do it. And that's why we're here Monday through Friday, because there's all different ways to figure out how to do that in our own spiritual lives. And of course, today we talked a lot about the rosary, and that's a great way to spend time in contemplative prayer and hopefully hear the voice of our Blessed Mother or Jesus Christ letting you know what it is that they need you to do. Once again, thanks for being here. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Till then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care and God bless.